session number 11448, row 2.
Mr. Tanner, row 2. So, you're moving from building to building all the time, are you?
Well, mainly building to building, whatever order he was given. I mean, if the sergeant said, right, you over there, you over there, you just did it. You had to. I mean, he was there to lead you, wasn't he?
So it was like street fighting, really?
Mainly street fight, but mainly house to house at most of the time. You were stuck in the house. You were doing the job. The main reason you was in Laporte was to hold it. Make sure Jerry didn't take it. Hold it for the Second Army to come through. Once they came through, that was it. You pulled out and you came back up to Booneville and Pegasus Bridge, took up new positions there, and then carried out what you had to, you know, whatever you was ordered, you see, because by the time the Second Army came through, things eased a lot. The finest sight of the lot was, what was his name, Lord Levitt, and the commandos coming through. It was a wonderful sight, with their green berries, not a helmet on. And they were coming through as though they were on a parade ground. You wouldn't think there was a war on.
Was that at the Pegasus Bridge?
Coming through the Pegasus Bridge, yeah. There was the old Piper in the front. I don't know if that man's still alive, but up to about a year ago, he was still alive, the man, actually.
Yes, I think he is.
Mm.
Did the Germans come anywhere near driving you out of La Paz?
Oh, we had some close encounters with them, make no mistake about it. They were ferocious. They tried their hardest. But, you know, again, I think it was the fear of being captured. You know, you didn't want to be captured, so you had to fight. You were virtually fighting for your life, never mind for France or for your country. You were fighting for your life. And you had a jump to do, and you had to hold that position, and that's the main thing. Hold that position at all costs. Whether you died doesn't make no difference. It's callous to say a thing like that, but that don't mean no difference. You're only, you're only gun fodder, aren't you?
Did you feel that the Germans might drive you out of La Paz?
Many a time. But there was, the German to me was a sort of, a tactless guy more ways than one, but if he said, right, we'll fight up till 11 o'clock and after that pull back, he did it. You had no reason for it. And many a time, you know, when he's pulled out, we thought, Christ, he's pulled out. You know, another half an hour, he might have taken the position. Something we never did understand with the Germans. They'd be fighting like ferocious tigers one minute and the next minute, gone. Pulled out. Whether that was their idea consolidating to build up their positions stronger, that I can't say.
Were you getting much air support at La Paz?
Well, no, not really. Not that I can recall. They went over, bombers and fighters going over, but because that was to attack the Germans further back, you see.
So you were there about a week, you said?
About a week, 10 days. I mean, to be quite honest, from you know, taking time and notifying time or watching anything, it never entered my mind. There are chaps, I don't know if Phil ever told you this as well, there are chaps that can actually tell you the names of virtually every place they went to. Don't ask me how they found out. I only know certain places from very certain, like Laporte, right? That was our first place we were being sniped at, Bob's Farm. Now we got pushed out of that for the first time, but we went back the second time and we captured the place. Mr. Thomas, our platoon officer, we thought was killed. I did anyway. I met him about 34 years later. But when he was carried away on a stretcher, somehow a blanket had fallen over his face. Of course, naturally, we took him to be dead. Now these are the places that stuck in my mind, but there are chaps who will actually tell you, yeah, we was at so-and-so. I say, can you remember that? And when you say to them, no, why not? I used to say, I'm not worried about the name of the place, I was worried about surviving.
What condition were you in by the time the Second Army came through the port?
Well, it was a close thing. It was a close thing. I mean, ammunition was getting low, food was getting low. Morale, to that extent, was becoming low because we'd been fighting, 24 hours without sleep. you see. And I mean, the only boost we got really was when the Brigadier Kinsley and General Gow, they came forward. They didn't have a tin helmet on. They both had red berries on. And that boosted the morale up, knowing when you see two high-ranking officers walking on the battlefield. And it wasn't long after that, a lot of them helmets came on, and on went the red berry. That's the sort of thing our officers were. That's the kind of fillip that they gave you. They were brave men. They were marvellous men.
What do you remember about the Second Army coming through? What did it look like?
Oh, not... Well, pardon me, I mean... They were fresh, looked quite fresh, although they looked worn and torn, I suppose, that journey over. One or two looked a bit sickly, but, I mean, coming through that channel, and when we heard about the weather conditions and so forth, bearing in mind some of those, from what we can understand, they'd been on the ships 24 hours, so I don't suppose that helped either. But, no, they came through, gave us a cheer, you know, good luck, lads, shouted different things to us, you know, good luck, lads, you know, good job done and all that sort of thing, thumbs up signs and so forth, you see. And I think they realised, you know, that we had a tough job to do, and they was thankful that we'd done it and made things a bit easy for them. Although, you must remember, the Second Army never got away with, they lost a hell of a lot of chaps as well, you see, but we done the main thing. We helped to form that bridgehead. Can you just imagine, without the 6th Airborne Division, if they had to come up, just land only, that I had a hell of a job getting through.
What happened to you after the Second Army came through Le Port?
Well, we just consolidated, and then it was a question of picking different places. Right, we're going to attack this place, we're going into here, we're going into there, and that was it, right up until we got pulled out eventually and came home, you see.
Can you take me through, step by step, what happened to you afterwards?
Well, as I say, we moved up. One of the places I've already mentioned was Bob's Farm, and then it was Clumbell's. What was the other places? Was it? I'd have to have a... If I had a map of the place, I could pick the word of the place. So, as I say, I don't remember all the names, but Pont-l'Evêque was another big place, which we was... well, we was held in reserve there while the 13th Battalion went in there, but they got badly mauled there. Just outside, we were on a bit of a hill, there was an orchard. We was in there, and then we got badly mortared there. Really did get hammered. And, in fact, we got hammered before we got into the, you know, coming down there, marching down the hill. We started getting mortared, and I dived into the ditch beside me, and I said to the bloke beside me, all right, and got no answer. I thought, well, you know, stuck up, probably frightened guy. When it was the next morning, I found out there was a dead Jerry there. You see, and this is the situation you was in. You just didn't know what was happening.
That was at Pont-l'Evêque.
Pont-l'Evêque, you see. But then, eventually, come the following morning, we went through Pont-l'Evêque, but Jerry had cleared off. And there were some terrible sights there. The houses, animals, dead horses, dead cows. From what we gathered in the hospital, they shot the nurses there. Killed the nurse, a couple of the nurses. I don't know if they shot a couple of nurses, all of them in there, but... And then we did hear that the Canadians had collared hold of a couple of the Germans and strung them up in retaliation. But the whether these were rumours or whether they actually happened, you couldn't say. But this is the sort of thing that went through. But when you heard these things, again, it's callous to say it, but it boosted you up. I thought, thank God, they paid them back. You see, that was it. And then... Pont-l'Evêque, we knew the next place, or next big place to go to was Pont-l'Odimir. And we were told, we've got to get there, and we went there. I think that was about 30-odd miles, and we pelted through to that place. There was no let-up. It was running, marching, walking, marching, running, walking, marching, with an occasional stop here. Okay, you know, 5 minutes, right, back on your feet, let's move, and away you went.
So this was the pursuit of the Germans?
Oh, this was the pursuit of the Germans. You was on the go the whole time. But I say that it's only down to the fact that our training kept us in good stead. I have to say this. There were times that the people that trained us back home, I recall, and even on the exercises, I could have shot them. Well, I shouldn't say the word, but the bar, I could have shot them. What we would have done to those blokes, because, you know, the pain, the aches, that we went through all, you know, we thought, Christ, is this necessary? You know, we're only going to fire, we're only going to pull a trigger, aren't we? But thank God they put us through those paces. They, thank God they made us go through those paces. Because that's the thing that I think kept us in good stead. I think we'd have panicked otherwise if we hadn't had the strong training. I really do. And that's an awful thing to say, but don't forget, we're only 18, 19, you know, 20-year-olds. Never been in battle before. And bearing in mind, you know, when you first drop and you hear this firing, if people say their legs didn't shake, well, there's something wrong with them. You shake like bloody hell until the things start moving, and then I can't explain it. Perhaps somebody from the medical world could do that. But once the firing starts, all of a sudden you seem to become calm. You collect your thoughts, you know what you're doing. But it's the build-up before. It's so hard, it's really hard to explain it. Really is.
What was the attitude of the French civilians to you? Did they seem to want
Well, I found that the people in the bigger places were more friendly to us than what the country people, like the farm people, were. They gave me the impression that they didn't want us there. And that's an awful thing to say, but... And I give you the reason for it. My reason, anyway. And I can safely say for half a dozen chaps that were with me, I never knew that their buildings out there had cellars. To me, a house was a house, like this is, you know, it's on the top of the ground, isn't it? But when you went into their cellars, by God, did you see some food in here? Smoked bacon, hams, bottled pears, bottled apples. Oh, yes, they had plenty of food. They weren't short of food, not on the farms, but the cities, you had to feel sorry for those people. But it was pathetic. Empty shops and so forth. And they were the people that more or less give us the biggest cheer of the lot. They really did.
So you went up through, pursuing the Germans through France into Belgium then?
No, from Pont-Audemer, they then brought us back home.
So this was a rest period back home?
Back home, we were sent on leave, fortnight leave, 14 days leave. And then we started training again. We didn't let up on the training. Never let up at all on it. My company, we were sent down to Battersea. You must appreciate that Battersea was heavily bombed during the war, so there was plenty of bombed out buildings that we could use for what we call town fighting. Now, that training was even harder, really, than what it was going over the plains, you know, the moors and so on, because we had some Scotch instructors, and they were sods. Excuse my language, but they were hard as nails. You know, the pushed in, I don't think they had noses, to be honest, just two holes and cauliflower ears. Thugs is the proper word, really. But again, they had a job to do, didn't they? And now your job was, you know, the houses are close together. And it was a question of knocking a hole in this wall, going through, knocking a hole in that wall, out through the other wall. And then certain houses, they had ropes up the side. You had to scale up these ropes, get into the window, down the other side, come down the other side. And then in between all that, figures would pop up. And your job was to hit those figures. Now, each man was given 5 rounds. Live ammo, 5 rounds. You was told, when the figure pops up, shoot at it. Now, when this is all over, he then comes round, how many did you get? Well, not too sore, Sergeant. What do you mean? Give me a rough idea. 3. 3 out of 5, right. So it goes round all these all the chaps that were with me. Now, there were 6 of us in our group. So he added it up. Let's just say, for our sake, it was 18 shots should be accounted for out of the 30s. And he came back to us. He said, well, in real broad Scotch, up the new, he said, I'm buggered if I know what you're going to do when you meet the bloody Jerrys. He said, not one of you is it a target. took us on the black ship where we just come back from Normandy, Sergeant. He said, Christ, however did you manage it over there? You see, but it's something I can't explain why we missed it. It wasn't a question, you drop on the ground, take sight. You had to fire from the hip, and it's very hard to do that. You see, but I shall never forget that man's face when he found we said how many we reckon we hit. And he come back and he told us nothing. Now, we had 4 days of that, incessantly. Wasn't allowed out, back into Chelsea barracks. Even though Jerry was still, flights were coming over, the sirens were going, but you were never allowed out or anything like that. Up the next morning, back round, and away you went. More training. What we didn't realise at the time, because that was getting ready for the Rhine crossing. Well, then, as I say, up come the Ardennes business, and it's something that I will never forget till they put me in my box, the conditions out there. We went down from Dover, we went, on the Princess Astrid, Dutch vessel. We had to, each ship had to make its own individual run across. We landed at Calais. They put us in one of these big warehouse sheds. Miserable, cold, dank, dark. Nothing to sleep, just bare floors. That's all there was at the time. And then we waited and waited. Rumours were running fast. First they wanted us, then they didn't want us, and then they wanted us, then they didn't. And the mood of the fellas, well, it was like a 50-50. They wasn't very happy at all. Eventually, up come the trucks, and we piled on them. Now, you can imagine, snow on the ground, the coldness, no eating in the trucks. You just huddle together with one another, trying to keep warm. And then we went right the way through till we got to a place called Dinant, D-I-N-A-N-T. Stopped there overnight. We got billeted on a Belgian family, and they were marvellous to us. Where they got the stuff from, we don't know, but we had beautiful soup they cooked up for us, coffee. And then the next morning we set off to a place called Celle. And the house, or the bungalow, whatever you like to call it, we was in, belonged to a Viscountess. And we didn't think people during the war, not out there, could have such beautiful things like she had. The house was immaculate. The furniture was beautiful. The clothes, well, we all decided which one we was going to take out to our girlfriend. But unfortunately, we had to put them back because she came up. She came back with a major. And he, we found out afterwards, was charged for bringing a civilian into the war zone. He shouldn't have brought her. And it was his own fault, apparently, because our platoon officer at the time, Mr. Hinman, or Lofty Streak, as we used to call the two names, he got told off for allowing us to stop in this place. Because then word got down to our commanding officer, Colonel Pinecoffin, and he got charged for bringing a civilian into the war zone. Apparently the order was that none was allowed in, you see. Well, then from then, we then was taken. No, we had to march it because you couldn't. The trucks that we did that was going through to get up these hills, it was a question of getting a jeep with a tow rope on the front, you know, what they call them. That used to be unwound, taken up as far as it could, up to a tree. That towing business, then it towed the jeep up, who in turn had a rope behind that tow attached to another lorry. And that's how they were getting them up. That's how slippery it was. That's how bad it was. And then we got ready. We got prepared to attack. Our place was called Wavril. W-A-V-R-I-E-L-L-E. Now, we were told that we got 5 tanks supporting us. Well, by then I'd been made up to corporal, full corporal. And one of the chaps came up to me and he said, "Here, corporal, you was in the tanks, weren't you?" So I said, "Yes, lad boy. What do you think?" I said, "With 5 tanks, Sonny Jim, once they get hold down position, nothing can touch them." The thing I forgot was the 88s. There was five shots, one after the other, and five tanks went up in smoke. I just couldn't believe. It just didn't seem possible it could happen. And the only fortunate thing about it all was those crews got out alive.
What kind of tanks were these?
Shermans. You see, and the thing is, if you've never seen a tank crew burnt to death in a tank, well then, consider yourself very lucky, because even the pictures of them would make you feel sick. So it was just a question, we was on our own, but I mean, we were plodding through snow that was, what, anything 5-6 inches deep. Bit of a, not between a gale and a blizzard, really. We had gloves on, overcoats, our Denison smock, I had a couple of vests, shirt, two pullovers. It just couldn't keep warm, just couldn't. How the hell we ever managed to, you know, carry out these tasks that was given to us in the conditions, I shall never know myself. But I suppose, again, pride, English pride, you know, you fight for your country sort of style. Plus the fact you've got officers leading you, and the thing was, you see, what you went through, the officers was going through the same thing.
Was this before or after Christmas?
This is January the 1st, 1945. We went out Christmas Day.
And the tanks were destroyed on
New Year's
Day. Oh, yeah,
they just wiped them out, no mucking about.
But that was New Year's Day,
wasn't
it?
That was on New Year's Day, yeah.
So, at Wavrell, you were supposed to be holding the German offensive.
Oh, yeah, that apparently that was the... We found out after that was the main point. It had to be held at all costs. There was Wavrell, Buer, and Groupont, or Groupent, whichever way you like to pronounce it. Perhaps I even spelt them wrong, but... The 13th Battalion took a hell of a bashing in Buer. A very, very severe bashing in Buer. But then, our start line, believe it or not, was a cemetery. That's where we started from. if that's not a forewarning of anything. But anyway, that was our start line. We marched up these gradients and then down the gradients into the place itself. He gave us quite a bit of a battle. But he's got a job to do, hasn't he? You see, he's got to try and stop us with what he had left. He didn't have much left, you know, admittedly. Well, then we finally took Wavrell, dug in. Now, the rest of B Company, with Major Keane, Major Reed, I should say, our company come up, they had to dig in the woods. There was this insufficient buildings really for them to sort of stay in. And we were lucky we were in a house, which I have since revisited. And then it was just a question, again, you're static. You weren't allowed to move in the daytime. No one was. You could only move at night. The idea of that, not to give your position away from Jerry. And those in the woods could actually see Jerry. It wasn't more than, 80-100 yards away, down in the dip. You could actually see them. But that was the order. No movements, night time only, you see. At one time, we've been there a couple of days, in front of us, there was about 20 Jerrys on a patrol. About 300-400 yards in front of us, walked straight across in front of us. Now I'm not boasting, I'm not bragging. We could have picked each and every one of those off. They had nowhere to hide. The ground was absolutely flat. Although it was, you know, covered in snow, but it was absolutely flat. They couldn't have been anywhere. But the order was, don't give the positions away. Another time, I just put two chaps out in the house or the garden, the corner. We dug a trench in the corner behind the privets. And this small patrol, I know about four or five of them, had come down. They actually stopped there and lit a cigarette and had a smoke. Two chaps was in there. But again, you see, wasn't allowed to move, wasn't allowed to give our positions away. And this was the training. This is how much the training they gave you, you see. I'm not going to deny the fact when they finally went and we brought the blokes out the trench, you can understand their feelings. To say they were shaken, how they were never spotted really, because they were deathly white. And Bob Petrie's one, I can't think of the name of that, and he said, "Corporal, whatever you do, don't ever do that to me again," he said. And we have a laugh. Well, I've met the man, but we always have a laugh over it. You see, but this... this is part and parcel of your training, and this is the job you're doing.
So you captured Wavrell.
We captured Wavrell. From Wavrell, we went on to a place called On, O-N. From there to Jamel, Jamel through Rushford. Where did we finish up?
What kind of resistance were the Germans putting
None
up?
None there, no, there? They'd already... It was just a quite... whether they knew we were coming or not, I don't know, but when we got there, that was the easiest part. In fact, we only had one casualty, I think that was at Jamel, wasn't it? A bloke called Wood, Timber Wood. The only man who stepped on a mine. And, well, he was the only man who stepped on a mine and the damn thing went off. And he lost his foot. He died about 3 years back. But he was our only main casualty from mines. And then...
You were telling me that the mines didn't go off because of the hardness of the ground.
No, where this mine was it was in the entrance to a field. And that was a little bit of a soft ground. Of all the space here between the gate to walk through, you have to walk through that particular part and step on that mine. And that was the only one that we can recollect out of all the hard ground that we walked over that went off. Incredible, you know, this is the...
You know the mines were there?
Nobody knew where they were.
But you knew there were mines there, did you?
We knew that he'd had mines somewhere, but there was no way you could... Nowhere could you indicate where they were, you see. You see, they were those wooden mines. You see, your other mines, like anti-personnel mines, used to have prongs sticking out. Or you could, you know, you could take a mine detector over them. But these, a mine detector couldn't detect them at all. He was a brilliant man, was the German, when he invented anything.
So you advanced for a few days?
Just for a few days, then we come static, and then we came home again. We got brought back to... No, we got taken up to Holland, that's right. We got sent up to a place called Venlo, V-E-N-L-O.
You were still with the same company in
the term? Yeah. Right the way throughout the war and after. But at Venlo, it was just the same sort of thing again, static work more than anything. Again, no movements in daytime. The only movements were made at night. And then you had a job going down onto the riverbank. Now, it was a section at a time. You did 4 hours on, and then that was it. Till the next time come round. But each section only done 4 hours, no more. Now, between our billet and the bank itself was a house. Now, I would take so many chaps down, well, I'd take all my platoon down, section down rather, leave so many in the house, and then someone from those that's already on the bank, Lance Corporal or Corporal, would come up and meet you to take you down to the others. But you never took over their place where they lay. There was no trenches dug. You just took white ground sheets down and that was it. You laid on those. But I would never take over that man's position. The simple reason which was given to us was the fact that someone might have made a noise, attracted the Jerry opposite, and he was going to, you know, he's pinpointed that place. So that if he slung a couple of mortars over, you was already there, and you can just understand, you know, the situation, the casualties that would have caused that. You just moved in your own place, you see. And then that was only that wasn't all that much, I suppose, about a couple of months. And then we got brought home in February. I got brought back to a place called Mier by Olst, just outside Brussels. We were expecting the chaps within 24 hours. Now,